Lots to get to here today. Got to catch up on news. Talk about the Sacramento Kings, 5-3, four straight wins. But first, this from BetQL. If you want an edge over Vegas, download BetQL, the app you need to get an advantage this season. Discover value bets, line movement, and find out what bets the public backs with BetQL. The best part, it is free to download from your mobile device. Head to betql.co and use promo code CAPSPACE for your three-day trial. Give yourself an advantage over Vegas and download BetQL. That's betql.co, promo code CAPSPACE. All right, let's change up here a little bit. We'll start off, Danny, with some news. And I think the fiasco in Cleveland is probably the place to begin.
Yeah, I mean, right now you have the situation where Larry Drew, now undefeated as the interim head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers,
he does not want to be the interim head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Wins without LeBron as Ty Lue did. Who was 1-18? Yeah.
Maybe he just needs to stay the voice of the coaching staff of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And so yeah, it's this weird thing. Basically, the situation is that Larry Drew wants either more money, a greater assurance of something beyond this year. And as of right now, it sounds like Dan Gilbert is unwilling to give that to him. And it's a weird circumstance because it's not a great job, but it is still a job. And so Larry Drew's kind of evaluating, seeing what leverage he has. I mean, he doesn't have a ton, especially considering he's willing to coach under this interim label, at least for now. Whether he accepts it or not, he is coaching under it right now. And maybe they could get somebody else, maybe somebody else on the staff, maybe not. They are, you know, they did get that win over the Atlanta Hawks today. And then I cracked up Jason Lloyd's piece for The Athletic, kind of talking about a lot of this drama. He got Mike Brown, current Warriors assistant, two-time Cavs head coach, to talk to him.
No. A former employee once told me that's not actually a quote from Mike Brown.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, but the quote is hilarious, though.
But basically, the quote is hilarious. So basically, he was talking about, that's right, it was in the context of talking about Brown, who has been paid by the Cavs since 2005, because they basically stretch out this money even if you're no longer with the team, kind of like what we talk about with stretching for players. But the quote from a former employee is, "Working for Dan Gilbert sucks while you're doing it, but it's great after you're fired."
Yeah, and Drew expressing his disappointment to the media today that it's been 72 hours, he said, and that they haven't agreed on any contract adjustment. He was making over $1 million, which is interesting. But and Lloyd said that with no coach above him, maybe he floated the idea that he could be in violation of his contract if he doesn't continue to coach. I would be very interested to read that contract and see what it says about these situations. He can still operate as the assistant, but since he is the lead guy, maybe he's in violation of his contract by not being the head coach because the coach above him got fired. That'd be very interesting to see here.
I would say the place to go from here is Houston. I mean, James Harden, he's likely out through Friday at least, and the tentative plan right now is to test Thursday and then decide Friday, and it's too early to make any big, big pronouncements, but it's looking a lot harder to win without him this year than it has in prior years, especially last year when they, you know, he missed that time due to a different hamstring issue, and they were able to survive it pretty well, and they had Chris Paul then, as they do right now.
Yeah, and Paul really struggling to score. James Ennis is still out. Harden may return on Friday. He's going to kind of test things out Thursday. They have a back-to-back, though, so you imagine at the very least he's going to miss one of those two games out of that back-to-back Friday-Saturday. That Friday game is at Brooklyn. But I mean, the problem is they just look awful. Like, they got blown out. Dame Lillard didn't have to play in the fourth quarter against Portland. They just can't stop anybody to save their lives. They're not scoring well either, which is another problem. And, you know, how much of that is the awesome tag team duo of Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony having to play a lot? Nene being out, I think, has really hurt them, because whenever Capella is on the bench, they are just absolutely getting wrecked in any area that big men are important for. James Ennis obviously is out too, but we saw them get worked pretty badly when Harden was healthy. Harden coming back isn't going to help the defense unless he takes Melo's minutes, then he probably actually would help the defense. But again, we need to get into them a little bit more here to make any serious pronouncements. I did not watch any of that Portland game today, but, you know, seeing what people I trust were saying about it, it was not pretty. But I think it's worth just noting here, this harkens back to 2015-16, a team with huge expectations. You'll recall that they traded for Ty Lawson. They had made it to the West Finals and lost to the Warriors, just as they did last year. They felt like they had gotten reinforcements, and they started off incredibly poorly, and I think they were 4-7 when they fired Kevin McHale. Things did not particularly turn around under JB Bickerstaff, and, you know, they ended up 41-41 and got worked in the playoffs by a Steph Curry-less Warriors team. So just worth watching here. I mean, they are not competing right now. They should not be this bad. I mean, maybe they should be because the personnel is just this bad. But, you know, with the high-level players they have, this is not acceptable. They were totally fine when Harden was out. Chris Paul was able to lead them to some victories. They were competing. They weren't. This is just desultory efforts getting completely blown out. And, you know, if that continues, perhaps there'll be a thought that, you know, I think with all the injuries, he'll get some more time. But if things don't turn around quickly when Harden comes back, I think there might be a chance that D'Antoni could be in some jeopardy here. But hopefully they will turn around. They certainly are miles behind some of their competitors in the West as of now. In Denver, Tyler Lydon, who we talked about yesterday on, is one of the players who might have the ultra rare third year option decline. The Nuggets discussed in their news release picking up other rookie scale options, but Lydon was not mentioned. That usually means that the option will be declined. I felt like they actually should have picked it up, even though he hasn't shown much. And then in injury news for Denver, you know, they've got Jared Vanderbilt, Isaiah Thomas, Michael Porter, all just on the shelf with no update. Vanderbilt, at least Mike Malone said a couple days ago that he's still a ways away from practicing, coming off those foot injuries that he suffered in college.
One quick thing we didn't mention in the Houston section, Marquese Chris is now available, but we'll see what that actually means. And his option will actually be decided on Halloween. We haven't heard anything yet. My expectation is that it will be declined, but we don't know that yet. Can move on to a former Rocket. Luke Richard and Mbamute has missed the last few games with a sore left knee. Fortunately for the LA Clippers, they have a lot of other forward depth. I mean, right now, Tobias Harris, Gallo, Mike Scott, those guys are all healthy. And so they aren't needing Luke as much, but he certainly brings something valuable over the course of the season. I haven't heard any specific prognosis of how long he'll
they
be
looked out. Awesome in the first half in OKC, led by 13, and then they drew up by 16 when the third quarter was over because they got outscored 39-10 and just an absolute OKC avalanche there. I think the next place to go is Phoenix, another of the rookie options that we'd speculated might not be picked up. And in fact, Dragan Bender's nearly $6 million team option for his fourth year was not picked up. Bender remains only 20, amazingly enough. But we would have probably declined it as well because he just is not showing any signs of being in a rotation right now.
And like Mario Hezonja last year, there is a possibility just because the option to the decline amount is so high that if he shows more this year than we expect, that he could just come back. And they could re-sign him. That didn't end up happening with Hezonja for a couple different reasons. We should also correct, it is incredible to me that both of us blanked on the most prominent recent declined option signing for more money, considering we spent 6 months talking about it. But Solomon Hill got his option declined by the Indiana Pacers and then made a bunch of money in the summer of 2016 with the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, and that's really, I think, the only one that I can recall that was the most prominent. But that was one where we thought, hey, it was probably really dumb to decline his option, because I thought he had actually shown something the year before. Mm-hmm. And also remember, he wasn't a guy, he was, you know, the 23rd pick. His option was like $2 million or something at the time. So and obviously he got overpaid by the Pelicans, as it turned out, although certainly injuries have had something to do with his inability to contribute. But yeah, thanks to those who tweeted that at us. And let me just tell you, getting old sucks to forget about stuff like that. And then also Devin Booker, no indication that he's going to be back on Wednesday. He was doing some light shooting over the weekend, but not a ton of intensity. So it seems unlikely he's going to play on Wednesday with that hamstring. Portland, despite the fact that they are playing very well of late, Dame Lillard has been on fire. Zach Collins is having an amazing start to the season, but Mo Harkless now has missed two straight. It was said that he would be available earlier in the day and then was not able to go with that left knee soreness. And that, of course, is the knee that he was operated on last year. And he struggled with that soreness in camp, has not been 100%. And if they really want to get to where they want to be this year, you know, he's going to have to contribute for them. They need still one more guy as a combo forward on this team who can be effective. I don't think that Jake Layman is that, although, you know, he has been getting some minutes at least.
And it might be more of a playoff issue than a regular season thing, but I mean, that's a part of going to be how they define success this year. And I think they need him for the regular season as well. Hull Neto is dealing with a hamstring issue. He's going to be out for at least two more games. And Derek Favors, after missing Utah's most recent game, is questionable for their Wednesday night tilt against the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's another thing to monitor, as Favors has struggled with knee soreness. The Wizards, we may see them play the 13-14 Chicago Bulls game, where they just try to go for 2 weeks and then cut a guy and go for 2 weeks with 13 players. You basically have 2 weeks to get a 14th player on your roster if you go down below that, and just to save the tax money. So they're going to sign Chess and Randall now to reach that 14 player minimum, and they had, were down to 13 after the Jody Meeks trade, and this is a team that certainly could use some reinforcements with Markieff Morris out with a concussion. They basically have no bigs right now. They're starting Jan Mihimi, but you know he'll fall out in about 3 seconds, and Jason Smith with Morris out with a concussion, and still no word on Dwight Howard right now either.
Switching to the Western Conference, Elfrid Payton is still out with a right ankle sprain. Anthony Davis is doubtful for their Wednesday night game at Oracle.
I thought he was questionable against the Warriors. Last I heard. That's too bad. I was really looking forward to that game.
Yeah, the official Pelicans report had him listed as doubtful. I mean, sometimes teams play fast and loose with that, but certainly disappointing if he ends up not playing. Andrew Wiggins has now missed 3 straight games. He is questionable for Wednesday against the Utah Jazz, the game we just talked about. And Sean Livingston told Anthony Slater that he's missed the last few games with a foot issue. It started in their last preseason game, which was the one they played in San Jose, and he may get another MRI soon, but the expectation is that it's not a major issue. They just want to be really patient with it and let it go out. And the Warriors have done something really interesting with Livingston out. The expectation would be, well, first of all, a lot of people think of Livingston as Steph Curry's backup. That's not rigidly true. He plays a lot with Curry and replaces Klay Thompson, but they've done a lot without a traditional point guard. They've been using Iguodala, Draymond Green, guys like that. And so the second unit, when Curry sits at the beginning of the second and fourth, when it's not garbage time like it has been a lot, has been with Iguodala, Green, McKinney, Jarebko, and then just kind of Draymond, whoever else the fifth guy is. And it's done pretty well. It's kind of, if you have enough ball handling, you don't need somebody who defends ones, especially if they can have Klay out there in those units, which they often do.
In other news for Golden State, Damian Jones' option was in fact picked up for next year. I'd advocated that they not pick it up. We discussed that extensively on yesterday's show. This one slipped by us over the weekend. Tyreke Evans actually was suspended for a game in Indy, and while they have been very much complimentary of how he has fit in there and like how he's tried to embrace the concepts during games, it sounded like he was suspended for being late a lot. And Evans has a little bit of a reputation as a partier, so that's not usually a good combination. So that'll be something to monitor at least a little bit there. But you know, if you're trying to read the tea leaves of, all right, is he going to be in Indy, or you know, why maybe doesn't he get a long-term contract after this year? Why didn't he get a long-term contract last summer, in addition to the market being a little tight? You know, maybe there's a little bit of smoke as to why that is. In Milwaukee, Giannis diagnosed with concussion symptoms. I don't know if they specifically said he has a concussion, but he is now in the concussion protocol after initially having to stay in the game. He kind of got dazed a little bit in their game over the weekend, then had to leave the game, went back to like a dark area for concussion testing, which he then passed, came back in, and then again suffered some more symptoms later on. I believe, I don't recall the exact timeline, and I don't think it's that important to go look it up. So you know, maybe there's an idea that they didn't quite follow the protocol, because it's essentially like, is there reason to believe the player may have suffered a concussion and that he should have been taken out a little bit earlier? But, you know, certainly concussions may be asymptomatic until later. But there definitely was, you know, when you see a guy kind of looking dazed like that, maybe there should be a little bit more of a adherence to the protocol in that situation. What else we got here?
Another declined option. Henry Ellenson will not be playing on the fourth year of his rookie scale deal, as I advocated for, as you advocated for on yesterday's podcast. And also, Luke Kennard is dealing with a shoulder issue. He will be reevaluated in about 2 weeks. The current estimate is somewhere in the 2 to 4 range. There's a little bit of conflicting reporting, though. Sometimes with shoulders, it might be a distinction without a difference. So 2 to 4 weeks is the timeline that I'm using.
EC joint sprain is the diagnosis there. And back to Ellenson, you know, we were both in agreement. He has shown nothing so far really in summer league, not really a good fit other than his ability to shoot and miss jump shots. But it's especially, you know, sometimes you'll see guys' options picked up like this when it's the same regime that drafted him, and they almost want to have some plausible deniability that, oh yeah, maybe this guy could work out. But with a new coach and a new management structure in place, there was no reason for them to keep him from an an optics standpoint any longer. And then in Miami, who have really been struggling, Wayne Ellington is available. He did not play over the weekend. I didn't check whether he played tonight. And James Johnson still didn't play against the Kings. Did he play tonight? Let me check.
Neither James Johnson nor Wayne Ellington played in their 125-113 loss to the Charlotte Hornets.
And in Toronto, they've kept rolling right along here, but Fred VanVleet has missed four straight with a toe injury, but Dallin Wright is back from his groin injury, and their Eastern Conference competitors, Boston. Is Aaron Baines back yet?
Yeah, he played 12 minutes in their narrow win against Detroit, and I didn't see it. I'm actually not sure I saw much of his minutes, so, but he is back, so that's good.
Daniel Theis, they need Baines back because Theis is dealing with a slight tear of the plantar fascia in his right foot. He'll be in a walking boot for 2 weeks and day-to-day after that. So we still won't get to see Robert Williams yet, I suppose, unless they start blowing some people out, which they haven't quite been doing yet. It was another pretty close win, although Kyrie did finally break out after shaving his beard and going to a more close-cropped haircut. Now that he's back to having a haircut you can set your watch to, he dropped 31 points on only 20 shooting possessions. Let's talk now about Toronto and Philly, which was the marquee game of the night. But first I want to just tell you about us, the Patreon that we have set up, patreon.com/DuncanLarue. The big new goodie there is ad-free podcasts, which Liam cuts out the ads and posts them there. And we have a ton of other content as well, including salary cap sheets that are updated very quickly with each transaction. I think as quickly as anyone that I know of updates them. And we post those in particular during heavy transaction periods, and also have projections with a little bit of subjective analysis there too on what teams' cap situations are going to look like going forward. And then we also posted today our monthly mailbag podcast. Danny and Liam were kind enough to do it when I was on my honeymoon, but now I'm back. We got into some really interesting questions on that today, so thanks so much for those. Let's talk to Philly and Toronto now. Danny, your thoughts initially here.
The same concerns that we had doing the Philly-Boston game on opening night are still really present, that their offense doesn't have the same rhythm against these truly elite competition. I mean, and the Raptors are absolutely that when they're humming. And remember, they were missing Fred VanVleet in this game. They were relying more heavily on guys. I mean, Lorenzo Brown played a few minutes. I thought he looked fine. Nothing too big there. And CJ Miles is playing more than you would expect when they're at full strength and all that kind of stuff. And also Kawhi Leonard, he's not all the way, he's still not all the way back, but he's still, to me, looking better than I expected at this point in the year, considering all the just tendonopathy and all the weird stuff they had last year. I have trouble calibrating on an injury that I completely don't understand and don't really have a way to measure it. So I don't know if I was maybe low on him. It's still unclear what his, where he's going to get to eventually, like when we're talking 3-4 months from now. But I think overall he's looking quite good right now.
Yeah, I mean, based on his stats, the last few games that he's played, and he obviously did not play last night against the Bucks as they got drubbed, but Giannis also missed that game with the concussion. I mean, 31 points, got to the foul line 10 times. He was 9 of 10, 2 of 5 from 3, 10 of 19 from the field, 4 steals. So he was awesome defensively. 4 assists too, which was solid for him. And all that in only 34 minutes. So that's really, really impressive. Kyle Lowry continued. He's leading the NBA in assists right now. He had 20 and 12 on only 16 shooting possessions. Did have 5 turnovers, but that was nothing compared to one Ben Simmons, who had 11 of the Sixers' 23 turnovers. The one bright spot for the Sixers so far, other than Joel Embiid just continuing to absolutely dominate, and he had 31 again tonight on very efficient line, was the Sixers weren't turning it over as much, but that changed in a big way. And, we saw how they turned it over a lot against Boston. This is another very hungry defensive unit, and they just, every passing window that they seemed to think would be open, whether it was driving, trying to dump the ball off, someone would come in from the backside wing, usually Kawhi or Danny Green or Siakam, and get a hand on it. Toronto got most of the loose balls as well, unless it was a defensive rebound, where the Sixers actually did get 17 offensive rebounds. And the Sixers just did not look nearly athletic enough. And I think also Ben Simmons, I'm not sure how he can score efficiently against these good defenses who actually have guys that he can't just overpower or blow past in transition. He doesn't have enough in the tool shed right now from a skill standpoint.
he's going to have to add a couple of things. And because these teams that have a lot of talent, they don't need to scramble as much on Ben Simmons. So those passing lanes, because he's a spectacular passer. If you overreact to Simmons, we talked about this a little bit with Draymond Green on the 15 and 60 with the Warriors. If you overreact to him as a scorer, then he can kill you as a passer. But teams aren't doing that as much. They're getting better with the scouting report. I also thought Danny Green did a nice job defensively. You know, his box score line wasn't anything spectacular, but I thought he just battling through different possessions. And this was another example of good Siakam, bad Siakam. I mean, so he has some plays that just, you totally understand why he's a big part of this lineup. I mean, physically talented. And it was all reflected for me on this one big play where he had a beautiful steal. Ball was on the inside. And then I think it was Simmons threw a pass to the corner. And it was a tough read and then a tough reaction to get the steal. Siakam gets it. They're pushing down. The Sixers are totally flat-footed because they had all those guys around the basket because you had a guy in the corner, two guys under the basket. Beat all those guys back. Siakam never passes the ball and just throws it away when he's trying to get to Serge Ibaka. And I think the good parts of that are far, far, far more important than the bad cards because they can be ironed out. But as we saw in the game against the Celtics, the smartest teams and the best teams are going to be able to exploit that. So the elimination of weaknesses or the mitigation of weaknesses might not be as big a problem in the regular season, but if Toronto is trying to go to those big stakes and they're relying on Siakam, which they very well might, it's going to be harder. Though we should mention OG Anunoby didn't play in this game due to personal reasons.
Yeah, Siakam, I mean, overall, he had 15 points on 10 shooting possessions and 15 rebounds, two assists, three steals of his own.
Oh, yeah, he had a great game. I want to be very clear on that.
Yeah.
He was
and I've echoed what you've said about like the skill area, but you know, he actually was able, it was more good than bad for him offensively in this one, although you know, it is a little bit of an adventure, but you know, he was just destroying Dario Saric a couple of times with like these spin moves. No help ever really came on him. He was just able to get right to the rim for a layup off one hard dribble and then a spin move. Few other observations here. You know, I don't think that this was, Markelle Fultz didn't play well, but this wasn't his fault. I didn't think, you know, he was only -5, and he and the Sixers, you know, were very aggressive on the offensive boards, but they also gave up 27 fast break points. So that was feast or famine for them. Fultz in particular goes to the offensive glass a lot, which I just, you know, I haven't really seen him kill it on there. Fultz defensively did struggle though. You know, he at least seems to understand where he's supposed to direct the ball in the screen roll game, but then he's not able to stay attached once he does direct the ball. Like, he'll just fall way behind, he'll get picked off afterwards, he'll get totally wrong footed even though he does send the ball the right way. So, you know, he's still been pretty rough defensively. I mean, we're starting to see more of the University of Washington Fultz on defense, which is not great. Philly did try to press their advantage to some degree against some of the smaller units because with OG out, they had to play Miles at the four. They're a little small. Mike Muscala got some post-ups, got some offensive rebounds. I thought Simmons also could have been better defensively. There's one play against Kawhi Leonard where Kawhi faced him up, and this is probably Simmons' biggest weakness last year, is just he's not that great, and he doesn't have the biggest wingspan either, at just contesting shots from jump shooters that he's guarding. And so he just had his hands down and Kawhi just faced up and never took a dribble and just drained it. I mean, Kawhi's going to make that every single time. Valanciunas was awesome. He had 23 points in 17 minutes. He did a lot of that damage against Embiid in the first half as well when he was on the second unit. And I mean, I think that's all I got. I just very worrisome for Philly. Both in a temporary sense that, hey, you know what, they still don't have that many guys off the bench. There's the Fultz issue, knows with that, you know, their support guys may not be that good. They're really, really overly reliant on Redick, who's playing more minutes than last year in some of these games, despite coming off the bench and starting the second half. Their backup big situation is not amazing, although Muscala has helped with that a little bit, although he's playing mostly at the four, not at center. But then the more macro issue is, you know, how effective can their big stars be, in particular Simmons? You know, I think he's only had one bad game this year. That was against the Celtics. He's been up there, you know, high 20s on pretty efficient scoring every other game, if not more than that. So and he's got the turnovers down too. He only had two turnovers tonight. I think he's averaging only about two turnovers, which is great considering the amount of usage he's had. But you just wonder about whether their best guys can be as good and as versatile and as modern as some of the best guys on these other teams. And the early returns certainly indicate, as Philly has fallen to 4-4, 0-4 on the road, that they are not not in the same echelon as the Celtics, Raptors, and Bucks, all of whom they have lost to quite handily.
One other thing I want to mention for the story of this game, Kawhi Leonard played 34 minutes, but he also missed a little bit of time because it was a very weird play. It looks like he got poked in the eye, but actually I think he got elbowed in the eye inadvertently by Robert Covington. Covington was contesting a drive, and it's good that he came back on the floor, but we'll see if there are any lingering effects. We just saw a guy get hit in the head and play and then have to miss game. So I don't think this is a concussion situation. I just wanted to mention it to monitor.
Yeah, you thought that it might be, but he came back and he looked quite good after that, and he still was, you know, making plays defensively. So you can't go crazy with this concussion stuff sometimes. You have to trust that the doctors there are doing their best job possible, unless it's something where it's just egregiously obvious from the outside. Let's turn to the now 5-3 Sacramento Kings, and they have actually played 5 of their 8 games on the road. They have won 4 straight wins over OKC, Memphis, which is actually looking like a decent win, at Miami, and now at Orlando. The Magic now 2-5, 1-3 at home. I think I want to just start with talking about how this was a very gritty game from De'Aaron Fox. He had 14-5 and 5 turnovers, which was not a great line, but he started the game, he was questionable due to back soreness, and then after back-to-back drives against John Isaac early, where he looked more explosive, he really just didn't look good, and he was getting heating treatment on his back, and was struggling. He had 3 fouls in the first half because he just couldn't really move his feet and stay in front of some of the Magic point guards. But he actually managed to get warmed up and summon a little more burst in the fourth quarter when the Magic were coming back, and I was just really impressed with the toughness that he showed to play 31 minutes. And this is one game where actually the Kings bench helped them. Coming into tonight, the Kings were plus 11.9 points per 100 with Fox on the floor and negative 28.9 when he was on the bench. And that actually turned today with Frank Mason being plus 11 in 21 minutes. Not that he himself did all that much, but I thought that was impressive. Whether he should have been playing or not, who knows? He was laboring a bit out there, but for a Kings team that's not making the playoffs, I guess it's not as important to rest him and save him.
Also, a successful night, especially early on. He had a couple of shots as the Kings kind of started to get into an offensive rhythm from Buddy Hield. Hield was only 1-for-4 from 3, but 7-of-10 from mid-range, and was really getting to making a good living there. Ended the game with 25 points on 18 shooting possessions, and also had 11 rebounds, which is good for him. Only turned the ball over twice. And Troy Williams has come into their rotation as a sub, basically, for Amon Shumpert, who is still unavailable. And I didn't think he necessarily looked great, but he did all the he was there, and he was hitting the shots that they really needed from him. And in this game, as you said, the bench helped prop them up. And at moments, Troy Williams was a part of those lineups.
34 minutes, and he hit 2 massive threes from the right corner. And Troy, if you ever watch him in summer league, he'll catch the ball and shoot the ball like he's one of the few guys where he'll shoot it and he's a bad shooter, but he'll shoot it like he's a good shooter. He just gets it out of his hand really quickly. He'll just bomb it. And so he's able to make a couple kind of tough corner threes, but generally has not shot that well. And then this team has really been wanting to get out in transition. They didn't do that quite as much in this game with Fox more hobbled, but Williams is unbelievable in transition. He's just shot out of a cannon every time he finishes these layups, just puts guys on their heels running the wings. He's a kind of an old school transition wing runner, and he could be really good there. Played some solid defense, had 2 blocks. The Magic are not a team that is going to take advantage of someone like Williams, who, is not known as the most attentive player necessarily. What did you think of Malvin Bagley's game?
I was thinking Melvin Bagley, but yeah, that probably works. So the concept of that is because he doesn't have an R, he doesn't have a right hand, so he shouldn't have an R in his name.
Yeah, but he definitely should have
fine.
An L.
Definitely should have as many L's as you can put in there.
I mean, yeah, and, Malvin.
Oh, can we talk about the play that pissed me off the most in this game was when Bamba's sitting there, and I mean, we've talked about Bagley, and those guys have played against each other. They played against each other in college. That was one of the more fun games that I watched in film footage. And Bagley's coming at him on the left side of the paint, and for whatever reason, Mo Bamba just plays his right hand, and then Bagley spins to his left and gets an easy layup. yet, but I'm just sitting there going, like, I mean, there's the split of you're a rookie and that's okay. Maybe you don't know the scouting report. I'm just sitting there like, there's only one thing you need to know with Bagley. And yeah, he had five offensive rebounds in this, 5 of the 8 for the Kings in this game. But offensively, all you need to know is one thing. And that's just, he's doing everything with his left hand. So play that.
Yeah. Please. And even when he goes left shoulder, he can't even like shoot with his left hand going left shoulder. There's one play where he had the guy beat, but then tried to like go for this crazy reverse layup that he almost managed to shoot it over the backboard without hitting anything. But you know, he just has a lot of bounce, obviously. He gets on the glass.
And his second jump is amazing.
I mean, he's up there with one of like the best second jumps you're ever going to see. And he actually was 2 of 3 from downtown. He had one that rimmed in, and then he actually did a grab and go and just walked into a three-pointer off the dribble for his other make. But you know, this is just kind of a progress report on him. I don't think he was a major component of why they won this game. They did go with him at center, with Bielitsa playing with him on the second unit. Bielitsa, it was discussed as the Sixers were struggling today, what a big swing that was of Bielitsa going to Sacramento and now actually playing at the four. He had 21 points on only 15 shooting possessions. And the way he spaced the four, he's played pretty much exclusively at the four. Everyone thought, oh, he's going to start at the three, but that is not the case. And then another guy who didn't shoot well tonight, but just has overall impressed me with his skill level, is Willie Cauley-Stein. He had 14 points, and although he was 6 of 15 from the field, but I think he just, and he had some really nice switch possessions late against, you know, this is a very switchable team. The Magic are offensively, you know, he's against John Simmons, who's not some advanced ball handler. But Cauley-Stein is starting to become what we thought, but in particular, just his skill level around the rim with like hooks and like actually doing some spin moves and just showing some feel. I mean, I just remember him like throwing the ball off the backboard on some of these finishes where he just had no touch at all, and he's really worked on that, so he deserves a lot of credit. He's improved to a level with that I didn't think was possible for him.
He was also really good in the hustle stats from this game. 6 screen assists, which is a lot for any team, and then 6 deflections, 10 contested shots, and 12 blocks outs. And yeah, I mean, it's a good overall game from him. Cauley-Stein is going to be one of the more challenging free agents to calibrate his value, because when you see him play well, you sit there and go, oh yeah, he can do this against a lot of teams, and then every once in a while have a real clunker. But he's been so much, he's grown a lot over the course of his career, and I'm really, you know, we were talking, I mean, in his second year about how big a disappointment he was, but he really has grown, especially this year for me. A
couple other small notes on the Kings. Kosta Koufos has returned from a hamstring injury. He got Harry Giles minutes, and then when Koufos wasn't playing, he played 13 minutes as the backup center. That's when they went to those Bagley at center lineups that I mentioned. So Giles out of the rotation. Then Yogi Ferrell, who we thought would be an upgrade on what Frank Mason gave them last year at backup point, he also got a DMP, with Mason getting 21 minutes. The Magic, I thought that Mo Bamba's game was probably the most noteworthy thing to discuss here. 5 block shots. He definitely was causing problems for the Kings at the rim. In particular, as the Magic trailed by 13 after the third quarter, in which they had scored only 16 points, and they made a run in the fourth, got within 3, and Bamba was a big part of that. He had 3 of his blocks during that period. He was getting guys in, just kind of surprising them, you know, shots that are out of the guy's hand. He's going and getting it. So that was good. He hit his only 3. I'd like to see him do more 3-point shooting.
Oh, can I talk about that 3? Yeah, so it was a nice play. It was kind of a poor job executing the scouting report by Sacramento, where it was a pick and pop, and they just, both the Kings went to, I think it was DJ Augustine that made the pass, and Augustine just throws behind back. But it was a totally in-rhythm 3 by Mo Bamba, and when you look as comfortable as he does with those, do it more often, because Orlando's offense is not really producing so much that those are comparatively low-value shots. Their offense is not producing many good looks, and that's a big, big concern that I have for them overall, is just that they're not, you know, if it's not in transition, and it basically requires either a really nice play by somebody who's not typically doing that, or a big mistake by the defense, which is actually feels like 75% of Terrence Ross's threes are either in transition or by somebody just completely losing him for some reason. But there aren't as many places to go, and I feel a little bit for Aaron Gordon, because sometimes he feels like he, in a better circumstance, he could be doing more. But he's not at the level for me where he can really propel an offense. He's more of a complementary offensive piece.
Yeah, Bamba is currently shooting 33% from downtown on 2 attempts a game. So yeah, you would like to see a little more of that. It does look pretty smooth from probably the best part of his offensive game. So he actually In the second quarter, they took Bamba out, brought back Vucevic, and the Kings went on a nice run to lead at halftime. And then with the way Bamba was playing, it seemed like Clifford was going to stick with him. And then out of an ATO, he gets stripped trying to do a dribble handoff, and then he threw away another dribble handoff that ended up in a pick six. And so by that point, the game was over, but they went back to Vucevic for the last 2 minutes. So that was pretty ugly. That's why Clifford took him out at the end, just those two ugly turnovers. Couple other notes here. I thought Aaron Gordon just has had some nice possessions so far this year, coming over as a weak side help defender in verticality. You know, he's playing more as kind of the three, so he doesn't have a chance to do that as much. And then John Isaac, I'm a little worried about his offense. His three-pointer does not look good in the games that I've seen, although the numbers on it are not awful. He's not getting up very many of them. I think he's shooting like, you know, 34% or something in the early going. But anytime like kind of a mediocre player gets matched up against him and tries to go at him, like Bielitsa was one, tried to take him off the dribble, he just had no chance. Like Isaac just completely swallowed him up. As long as Isaac is not getting overwhelmed strength-wise, I mean, he's already very good isolation defender here. Although Isaac did not close the game, they went with Terrence Ross, who was really the only guy who's hitting shots. This was a difficult game for the Magic. I would guess that their shot quality was higher than the Kings, but they shot a mere 11 of 43 from downtown. And Fournier had a rough game, 3 out of 13. Isaac was 0 of 4 on threes. Gordon was 2 out of 7. So, I mean, these aren't amazing shooters taking these shots necessarily, but they got some open ones that could have gone down a little more than they did.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. And some of those were just defensive failures by Sacramento, and I mean, happy for them that they're doing so well, but we'll see how that works against other teams. So praise them for the success that they've had and for grinding through games like this. I mean, there are a lot of reasons you could expect them to struggle. I mean, just dealing with your point guard, who's the key of their offense, being hurt and everything. And they have a lot of guys. And I think it's interesting that even though they have a lot of players that are kind of similar quality, that in this game, at least Jaeger narrowed the rotation, that it was only 9 guys and Kufos only played 13 minutes. But I mean, they got more from the guys that they put out there for the most part than they would have expected from the bench guys. I still think Farrell's better than Mason.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't really have too many issues with what they did.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of different players. I mean, Farrell's been playing more off the ball to some degree in Dallas. He's not really much of a distributor, but you know, a much better shooter off a pick and roll. We'll see what ends up happening there. Let's turn now to Memphis and Washington. The Wizards falling to 1-6, although 5 of their 7 games have been on this early West Coast swing. When they lost their first two at home, you figured it would be pretty rough, but this is another game that wasn't that close. By the end, Washington was done in despite 14-35, 40% three-point shooting on a high volume. 20 turnovers, including 9 for John Wall, who, again, despite 22 points and efficient shooting, he hit 4 out of 7 three-pointers, really struggled. They weren't guarding him a lot from three, and he hit some late. But I thought that Mike Conley just leaving him every single time. Zach Lowe talked about this on his pod today, that when Wall gives up the ball, he's not cutting. He's not much of a spot-up threat in general. And so, yeah, he did hit that 4 out of 7 to make his line respectable. But there are a lot of times where Mike Conley was just helping on all the stuff they like to run with Brad Beal, where they curl him into the lane. And then Wall's defensive effort was atrocious. Matt Moore tweeted about this, how Garrett Temple just blew right by him. I mean, on just a normal closeout where Wall like never got into a stance. He let Shelvin Mack late clock just like pull up for a three right in his face without pressuring him. Like, guess what? Like, Shelvin Mack's not going to go by you. Like, you could pressure up a little bit more late in the clock. So that wasn't good. The Wiz. Yeah.
I want to add something to the turnover thing, because this is totally amazing. Not only did Washington turn the ball over 20 times, 16 of those were live ball turnovers. We talked on the 15 and 60 about how Memphis was generating all these turnovers. Like, oh, that's not going to continue. It's like, well, this game only strengthened all that. And I mean, it's really hard to beat a team if you give them 16 just basically runs the other way.
Yeah. And, you know, Kyle Anderson plus 10. 4 steals for him. Marc Gasol had 5 steals. So he's been more active than he was last year. We talked about that on the 15 and 60 some. Jaren Jackson, his minutes have been falling. His production's been falling. He played a mere 10 minutes. He got his 4th personal foul a minute into the second half and never returned. They went with Rab as the backup center rather than bringing Jackson back in, which is a little odd to me. And then Mike Conley, although he didn't shoot it well, he just... he's the only guy on this Memphis team. And he just, as someone who can run the show, get the rhythm of the offense going, give them some kind of shot making when the clock breaks down, runs down, I should say. You know, it's just a massive improvement. And Shelvin Mack actually has been playing pretty well for this team. He had 14-9. He actually started the second half, and then they went with, actually, I don't know if he did start the second half. I think they might have brought him in for Jackson, actually, come to think of it. Yeah.
They did. Yeah, Jackson picked up that foul, and then they brought in Mack, and they went on a 17-1 run to start the third quarter. That's really when the sky fell. Something I want to mention with Jaren Jackson's fouls in this game, I haven't watched all of his games to say if this is true. A lot of it was kind of the young guy trying to do too much. So his fourth foul, he set a screen on John Wall for Conley, and he said made pretty good contact, but then Wall started getting around the screen, and so he's like, oh, I'm just gonna move to follow John Wall. Well, that's a moving screen, and that's an easy foul. And so he had a couple of those, like just trying to get through stuff or trying to get a little bit of extra on it. And partially because young guys never get those calls, and partially just with the renewed emphasis on freedom of movement, he's getting caught up a little bit in that. But I don't see anything like structurally wrong, like, oh, he's making stupid plays or anything like that. It's just need to straighten that out a little bit. And I also think JB Bickerstaff should try to give him a little bit more rope, just because even though the Grizzlies are competitive, I mean, now they're 4-2, Rab doesn't really help your chances of winning much. And Jaren Jackson, he finished with four fouls. Like, you know, it's not like he fouled out or anything like that. I think you give him the chance to do that. Then you can go to Rab, and Rab was fine in this game. He wasn't bad, to be sure. He had 8-2, I think, in 12 minutes, but I didn't see him really stand out too much, in my opinion. So I would give Jaren Jackson the latitude, even if he's a little bit frustrating, especially when they had a fair amount of, maybe not full garbage time, but garbage-esque time in the second half of this game.
Yeah, Garrett Temple dropped 20. He was 4-7 from three.
Oh, did you see what happened after the game? It seemed like Garrett Temple, who was on the Wizards 2 years ago, it seemed like he was basically like consoling Wall and Beal, guys he used to play with, and just like, or like talking with them. And you have all these personal relationships, but I mean, this must be surreal for the guys. Jared Dudley was tweeting about it a little bit today, who have been a part of this organization and, you know the talent involved here, to see this team not only 1-6, but generally getting their asses kicked in their losses.
Yeah. As Fred Hoiberg would say, Hoiberg loves to use the word ass when they really get killed, especially by the Warriors. I think he's used ass in his yearly "We Got Destroyed by the Warriors" press conference. But anyway, yeah, it's just rough. I mean, I think the effort level is not there. I mean, the first play of the game, Kyle Anderson out-hustles their entire team to get an offensive rebound. Like, Otto Porter just, like, you know, didn't react to the ball. He was just sort of like, oh, the ball's over there. Should I go get it? Oh, I guess I should. You know, I've talked about this before, where if you just kind of, if every time you see a loose ball, your decision process is, do I have to go get that? Okay, I guess I will. Versus, ball, get it. Like, you know, and that's what Kyle Anderson did, and that's why he got that loose ball. It was just stuck out to me as being the first play of the game when you shouldn't be tired at all. Porter did play a little bit better in this game. I was also struck that as they were in the midst of that 17-1 run, Brooks calls timeout, and then, you know, biggest possession of the game, we got to stanch the bleeding here. He goes to a Jeff Green post up against Anderson, like not even an attempt to like get him a favorable matchup, and that went as you would have expected. Kelly Oubre has been a bright spot, at least offensively, for the Wizards, although he's certainly playing the part of their defensive problem. He had no idea how to guard a Spain pick and roll, and that was basically the icing shot that Mike Conley hit as the screener in the Spain pick and roll, and then he just popped out and Oubre was just standing under the rim and no idea what was going on. But he has looked more facile offensively. He's added stuff to his game slowly. Got to the foul line in this one at 16 points. He hit a step back three, although he's getting a little thirsty from out there. And, you know, he might be one of these guys that Beal and Wall are complaining about, like, not kind of knowing their role and being worried about contracts, which Oubre is. Because if he plays well, I don't think Washington will be able to afford to bring him back unless they make major changes. Yeah, what do you got?
One play that cracked me up in this game, I think it was in the second quarter, Jan Mahimi fouled Mike Conley in transition when the Grizzlies were in the bonus. And so I genuinely don't know if he was just didn't know that Memphis was in the bonus, or it's just Jan Mahimi and he just can't help himself from fouling. So I was sitting there, because there were a couple of plays in various games of this where I'm sitting there going, like, I don't know if this, what kind of mistake this was. It was certainly a mistake. And with Jan Mahimi, he's so foul prone that I'm actually giving him the benefit of the doubt and not knowing the foul situation.
Yeah. Jan,
Oh, something I wanted to ask you. with as Washington's figuring all this out, and you know, there are some bigger problems and maybe and some things that'll also be corrected just by having more depth. I mean, they really did miss Markieff Morris in this game. I feel like as they're figuring out and trying to find answers here, they should be giving Satoransky more run. He just a competent player, kind of knows what's going on out there, tries when he's out. I mean, and last year he really did step up when they needed somebody with John Wall. And so even if it's just like supporting somebody who's been there with you before, I feel like he could give them, it's worth a try at least. And he basically, you know, he's an afterthought right now in Scott Brooks' rotation.
Yeah, in fact, he played 6 minutes in the first half and then did not play at all, I don't think, in the second half. Austin Rivers was the point guard who, you know, he might be a little better option than Satoransky defensively, at least as an on-ball guy, but certainly is not a natural point guard. You know, they're playing him next to Beal. Beal is doing a lot of the initiation. 40 minutes for Bradley Beal and 38 for Porter here. So they definitely were trying to get this one, despite, you know, being relatively out of contact for most of the second half. They made a little bit of a run to get back into it. The Grizzlies also imposed their pace. They have been doing that. This was an old school, I mean, at least relative to, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, only 95 possessions. That would have been about average a couple years ago, but Memphis did impose their pace there. And it's especially remarkable that there are only 11 offensive rebounds total in this game, and it still was an incredibly slow pace. So they definitely were able to keep the Wiz out of transition for the most part. But a lot of that, as we talked about in the 15 and 60, is Memphis just really runs through their action slowly. And against a team like the Wizards, who are only going to take so much time to break down in a given possession, Memphis actually put up a very nice offensive game, 114 offensive rating. All right, I think that's all I got here. You want to anything else you need to talk about before we go?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I'm excited. Hopefully we get to see Anthony Davis in person in the game on Wednesday. If you haven't read it, you can read my piece on the rookie scale options. Also, you can listen to the podcast that we did. And I'll have something out for the Athletic San Francisco at some point during this week. It's submitted, but I think they're just spacing it out on McKinney and Jarebko, because I think what they've done has been very interesting this year. So you can keep an eye out for that. I'm guessing that'll be Thursday.
Yeah, theathletic.com/capspace. By the way, Athletic got $40 million in funding today, which was big news. Valuation of $200 million.
Although it was
that's pretty comparable to some of the other like similar sports media properties, although they certainly are growing quite quickly and are producing a lot more content with a lot bigger names, especially in the basketball space, including you and me very rarely. All right, that'll do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll finish up the 15 and 60 tomorrow and see what else we can come up with, maybe a little something different. And then we'll be doing our live cast on Thursday for Bucks Celtics. Let's really hope that Giannis is able to make it back by that point. Although I think it'll still be really interesting, even if he can't, because the Bucks have been playing so well even without him. All right, talk to y'all next time.